Welcome back to Extra Features Interview. Today we have a fabulous guest all the way from England. We have Jack James and his new film. What's up?
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good. Glad we finally got together. We've been having a lot of problems, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah, it is. You know, the other side of the world and all that business. That's what happens.
Is it really the other side of the world?
Well, it feels like it, doesn't it? Whether it is or not, it's far enough away to just say something flippant like that.
Well, it is. It's the time difference, because usually I'm doing these first thing in the morning.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's quite late at night, I guess, for me. Not too late, but yeah, late enough.
Yeah, it's like late afternoon for me, so we're all good. So what have you been up to? You've been filming something, you told me?
Doing some bits and pieces over here. Some mad little bits, but nothing to sort of talk about just as yet. Been writing more than anything, to be perfectly honest. Trying to get something new off the ground and working away at that, but... Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Okay, enough of the preamble. I'm making you wait. Tell everybody the name of your new film, because I can never say it right.
Yeah, the film is called Malady.
So, where did you come up with this concept? It's quite different.
I guess it's kind of difficult to pinpoint exactly when I came up with the idea for the film. I think it's probably like an accumulation of ideas over a long period of time, lots of different kind of themes kind of going on. I've been working on in various different ways and guises, and then it all kind of came together in this one sort of intense, dreamlike kind of thing. Yeah.
So I have to ask, because every English person I know goes to the pint. Were there a few pints involved in this, the bar? Or?
A few pints?
Yes.
Yeah, of course there was. I'm English.
I know. That's why I had to ask. That's why. Because she's always worked
yeah,
that way.
Yeah, no, well, you know. I think probably drinking is the only way to get filming a feature film, right?
Hey, it's all good with me. So let's get into your film. Let's get into it. I think we got this. I mean, I want to first say you have a very small world of this film. It's not a big world, you give me. It's very tiny.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's right. It's quite purposefully kind of claustrophobic and sort of intensely personal, I guess, to the characters that are in the film. It's very much focused on it's very much focused on Holly and her kind of grief and the kind of the tiny world that swirls around her and starts to kind of appear before her and then sort of slowly spiral out of control. But yeah, it's definitely very small and claustrophobic and kind of tight-knit and difficult to escape from.
So before I even get into any more, I really enjoy like the makeup. I have a note
for
nice makeup on here, so that's my first shout-out to whoever did the makeup. I really liked it.
That's great. That's good. That's a chap called Gaz. He's a top guy.
So, and I also have a note. You use sound immensely in your film. Like, you have the strangest music I've heard in a long time in a film.
So I'll take that as a compliment.
It's a total compliment. There was not, like, I'm not taking an in shot at. So, where does your sound ideas come from?
Again, I think it's just, I want the whole thing to be a kind of disorientating experience, a very kind of expressionistic and not completely linear and not necessarily predictable. And I didn't want to kind of hit those. It's not really a horror film, but it kind of is. And I didn't want to hit the horror cliches, if you know what I mean. I wanted that kind of feeling of dread and that sense of kind of despair without hitting cliched kind of notes. And, like, music is often the place where those cliches are really hit. Loud bangs and kind of discordant rumblings building up to something obvious. I always kind of imagined it being this kind of sprawling kind of rolling, rumbling kind of atmosphere that just resonates over the entire thing and kind of almost helps the images kind of melt into one another and helps, like, as a result of that, the characters kind of melt into one another. But that kind of came from, you know, things that I love as well. Big fan of David Lynch and Eraserhead, and I think there's obviously, like, especially with the music, sort of hints of Eraserhead kind of in that, and that kind of soundscape, and it all came from an amazing guy that I knew from back home called Bradley Oliver White, who, like, over the years, many, many years ago, actually recorded his very first EP on a four-track cassette recorder. And it was, you know, the sound quality, I'm sure, if I look back on it now, absolutely dreadful. I'm by no means any form of music producer. But I recorded his stuff, and we got on really well. And over the years, he always sent me bits and pieces that he was working on for no real reason. But he sent them to me, and when I was writing Malady, I'd listen to it, and it just seemed logical to kind of get in touch with them and say, hey, do you mind if I use a couple of these, and maybe we create some new bits? And he was fantastic. You know, he never actually, when he did it, he never watched a single frame of the film. I'd send him directions, I'd send him the kind of things I was thinking about and the kind of feeling that I wanted to kind of evoke and put out there, and he'd come back a number of weeks later with all these different pieces, and it, you know, it was damn near perfect every single time. You know, I'd mix various bits and maybe change the order around here and there, but he absolutely just got it from that. And yeah, he watched it for the first time at a screening at the East End Film Festival, which was quite mental. I think he had one complaint. I got a bit too bassy on one track, which he was a bit annoyed by. But other than that, he was very happy. And you know, it was great working with him. It's a really strange kind of way of doing it, I think. But it worked, you know.
So hold on. He got upset with you for being too bassy?
Yeah, only on one bit. It was literally one bit. And I did really hammer it. I knew which bit he was on about. And, like, if I'm being completely honest, he's right.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not really going to complain. Like, yeah, he's completely right. I just couldn't help myself.
Well, I guess the question, how much time did you spend on the sound in this film? Because it's so important to it.
I mean, quite a while, I guess, but the whole thing was kind of done as one, really, because I, you know, after having shot it all and everything, I cut the film and kind of graded it and did the sound mixing and sort of aided with the design, but it all kind of just happened as one, and it was all very, it was all sort of very organic, really, in terms of it coming together. It's just kind of sitting back and taking the time with it and letting it kind of breathe a bit and letting it do its own thing. You know, like, the film was much, much longer in various stages in, like, an embarrassingly awful kind of way. You know, and that was down to every single element of it. It wasn't just down to the amount of footage I had. It was down to the amount of sound I'd have as well. And there was, you know, when looking at the edit, I kind of tried to approach it as open-mindedly as I could. And at times it was barely recognizable as a film. You know, it was just this kind of dark spaces with noise and stuff happening over the top of it. But it's, you know, it's kind of the way filmmaking works, I guess, if you want to take that approach and just let it be its own thing. But, that's a really long-winded way of saying it took a long time.
Well, your film, I almost, because when I started watching it, I thought maybe it was a silent film.
Yeah, there's not much dialogue in it. I think, like, there's only a couple of lines of dialogue in the first 12 minutes or so, I think.
I wrote them out. The first lines, you can turn around, and you turn around to a naked woman. Turn around, your first line you give me. And it's a naked woman. I'm like, what the hell? I mean, I guess my question is, I have to pay attention to your film to know what's going on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
it took me a few minutes. I started piecing things together as we went. Yeah. But, I mean, the first 15, I'm like, what am I watching? I mean, it wasn't I was insulting you. I had no idea where you were going.
Oh, yeah, no, that's, you know, again, like, that's kind of cool because, you know, I often find myself kind of knowing exactly where I'm going. So, you know, for it to have that effect is a pretty cool thing, I think.
Okay. I'm going to discuss some of my notes here. Because, I mean, I have to increase your claustrophobic of the film. And I find this film very claustrophobic for me. I found all the shots are close-ups for the most part.
Yeah.
Like, you seem to be very in close. Like I said, tight. And I'm like, wow. This guy really wants me to be uncomfortable all the time. And was that your point? Was that your plan?
Yeah. You know. I kind of like the idea of the film making an impression and leaving a lasting impression. And, you know, I think I said before, I wanted it to be very, very personal and very much kind of about the characters. And, you know, I guess that kind of takes you back to the sound design as well, and the idea of everything kind of melting in as one, and it almost being like you're kind of inside their heads a bit. And, you know, I guess logically the only way to get inside somebody's head is to get as close to it as you possibly can before breaking through. So close-ups seem like a kind of good way of getting right into the performances and right into the kind of essence of what's going on, I guess.
Well, I did do some research on your film because I needed to. I was looking for some direction. So IMDb quotes, the director subject his actors to extreme isolation.
Worked
them into deeply meditative state of duration of the shot. I don't understand. Was this true?
Yeah, it is. We basically, anybody who was involved in the film in terms of performing in the film was kind of required to leave their own life at the door when they stepped inside. And the idea was that they'd kind of remain in characters' headspace for the duration of the shoot. And, you know, and they were, just to be very clear, they were very willing participants. They were completely sort of game for it.
Well, that's why I'm asking. I need to know. Like, did they know this was coming?
Yeah. No, they were completely up for it. And I think, like, to them and even to the crew who were part of it all felt like something kind of special and unique and different that everybody was kind of a part of. But the important thing was that it didn't that it sort of resonated on screen and that it did kind of leak into the film itself, because there was a lot of improvised moments in the film, and there'd be scenes that we'd go into, and, you know, I'd tell one actor to kind of stick by the script and go down that route, but then I'd tell another character to do something completely different and make sure you take them to this place and make sure you go down this route. And it kind of made for an interesting sense of conflict, and it made the whole thing kind of feel that bit more alive. And also from a kind of practical perspective, we had an incredibly low budget.
I agree with that.
Yeah, you know, which is very common, independent film, but having everybody kind of in character and in that space meant that everybody was incredibly focused all the time. And when it came to finally getting going, because, you know, some of the setups would take quite a long time in terms of the lighting and everything, but as soon as it came to actually rolling, everybody was sharp and focused and ready to go and completely on point. And it was rare we'd do any more than 3 takes of any one scene. It was all very kind of on point and right there. And a lot of the moments in the film were one takes, you know. And I think that kind of lent itself to that. So from a kind of practical point of view, it was really positive because, yeah, it just helped move things along and make sure everybody was focused. But also it made it an incredibly bleak and oppressive atmosphere that, you know, I think came through.
Okay, I just want to go back. I forgot to address something earlier. You have a church scene at the beginning of your film with lots of extras going on.
Mm.
Where did they come from?
We got a bunch of people to just put messages out there saying we were making a film, local independent, and just seeing if people wanted to be a part of it. And I'm from a town called Northampton in the UK. And actually, since this film has been made, definitely not because of this film, but since it's been made, there's been quite a nice little filmmaking network started to grow and happen in Northampton, which is absolutely fantastic. But back then, there wasn't quite as much happening or going on. So I think, a lot of people saw the opportunity to just be in something and see something going on and do it. And and it was really lucky, you know, a whole bunch of people turned up and came along, and it was great, you know. It was strange because obviously the rest of the film is so minimal.
Yeah.
So to then be dealing with a scene that's got that many people in it was quite nerve-wracking, quite odd, but great, you know. It was new dimension to the film. It's cool.
Now, before I go on, I wanted to ask about the coffee shop, but I'll get there. My next question is, you have an internal car shot is my note. Do you know what I'm talking
about?
Okay. Now, I wrote very strange, because, I mean, again, you were so in there. Like, were you climbing on top of them?
Sometimes.
Okay. I have to ask.
Yeah, you know, it's, you do what you got to do to get the shot. So, yeah, and I'm quite small, you know. I'm a small guy, so I don't weigh much. It's fine.
Were the, I guess this is going to be a question I have to phrase this correctly. Were they comfortable enough with you at this point to do these things?
Oh, sorry, what's that?
I mean, I don't know how well you know your leads. I mean, were they comfortable? You getting very in there. Like, you are in their face.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they were, because it was, I shot the film, so it kind of helped being the director and the cam op, because they kind of ignored the camera then. And when it came to leading up to actually filming it, we were very thorough in terms of developing the characters and talking about the characters and talking about their past and everything that kind of built up to where they were. And it was just a matter of building up a relationship with those guys in the months leading up to shooting, and about casting the film right, you know, getting the right people involved who want to go that deep and want to explore that and want to be in a film that's got that kind of content and that kind of proximity. Because I always made it very clear from the very beginning that it would be shot in that kind of way and it would have that kind of feel about it. So they knew where we were going with it, and obviously we did a few kind of tests and bits and pieces before we finalized casting, and it's kind of clear that they were the right people for it, so it absolutely worked. And they were very much into it. It's, you know, I would say that obviously, but they assure me they were very much into it.
Okay. I wrote, as the relationship grows, a vocal song shows up. Now, why did you switch from instrumental to a vocal?
Oh, yeah. So I guess that was really at that point to just soften the whole thing, because really that's when the tension in the film's kind of alleviated. It's a small pocket within the film, I think, where the two characters kind of link up in an almost kind of, in a beautiful and kind of innocent way, and it's almost like they both forget the kind of shroud of grief and everything else that's kind of surrounding them and been swirling around them for the entirety of the film. So that kind of one moment seemed to be the right moment to bring something in that had a kind of softer vocal and had a kind of an old kind of worldly feel about it. But still kind of lyrically, it still kind of alluded to not particularly great things, and also to the kind of, it was a bit of a foreshadowing in terms of him coming into contact with his mother soon as well. But yeah, it felt like the right moment to just soften everything and let the two characters kind of enjoy that moment together, I think.
Okay. How did you get your coffee shop? That's the one I told you I was going to come back to it.
The coffee shop. Kamal, who was in the film, he made a couple of films himself, and he'd done, it's a local place, and he's got a few cafes, actually. He's got three or four cafes in Northampton, and Kamal previously had shot something else in one of his other cafes, so I knew that he was kind of up for having people filming it. In actual fact, the one we filmed in is a cinema-themed cafe, and if we shot outside of it, you you'd see it's got like a huge old cinema front, and it's got all the menus are kind of cinema themed and everything, but I hid that away a bit because it would have been a bit, it wouldn't have been particularly subtle. but he's just really into it, and he was a fantastic guy who's just really supportive of independent filmmaking and local people doing things, so it was actually really easy, and he fed us all, which was great. You know.
Oh, see, that's what we want to know. That's what I want to hear. Free food is good.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, he was great. Really good guy.
Now, I wrote you. Then you take your film. I kind of needed to know where it went, which was great. And you finally took me to visit the mom.
Yes.
And the mom is quite different. But I did make a note that she's still trying, wants to look pretty.
Yeah.
Is this based on anyone? Because this is, like, strange. Oh. I don't know what else to say on. I don't want to ruin anything, so I'm trying to be polite.
Oh, man, if it was based on anyone, you know that I could never say that.
Well, I was just wondering, because, I mean, I wrote, this mom is evil in my notes.
She was a lot of fun to write. You know, her dialogue was a lot of fun to write, and she's particularly nasty. She's not based on any one person. She's just based on all sorts of kinds of evil.
Well, I thought maybe you went to watch some old Hitchcock and you pulled it off that. I kind of got that feel from her.
Yeah, no, there is that. I remember a lot of people who initially auditioned for her role said it reminded them a lot of the mother in Carrie.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
Yeah.
She's got a kind of wicked tongue on her. She's a firm believer and preacher of something, but I don't think she's quite sure exactly what it is she's a preacher of. But whatever it is, it's distinctly unpleasant.
I'm not going to talk anymore about your film there. I'm going to leave it for the audience because that's enough for me. Because, I mean, I think I pretty hammers you pretty good on most of my points.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely.
Because I don't want to get any more. So I apologize, people. Go see it because I can't go any further. And he knows why I have to stop because we're getting near the end. So I guess my other question is, you've made a film, fabulous, and you went to showing. So how did you show your film or get the word out about it?
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's the first film and everything. I'd not really done anything like that before. I'd not had short films out there or done that kind of thing previously. So I guess I just sort of shot into the wilderness and took a bit of a punt and applied for a whole bunch of film festivals. And the first festival to take it on was an incredible festival in San Jose called CineQuest. And a director of programming is just, yeah, he's amazing. He's a real good guy. It's a chap called Michael Rebell. And he was just really into the film. He was the first guy to accept it. I applied for CineQuest and sort of regretted it almost instantly because it was $40, which, you know, at the time was quite expensive. And I thought, well, I've thrown that away. They're never going to have this. And then they got in touch a few months later and accepted it. And I went out there, spent 3 weeks in San Jose, world premiere. And Roxy, who played Holly, she came out as well. And it was absolutely terrifying, you know. I don't go out much. I don't do much socially, and up until that point, I'd done, you know, nothing socially, and I hadn't been out for years, and then I went to America to show this film, and it was genuinely terrifying. I lasted 5 minutes in the screening, had the anxiety attack, and ran away, and then came back at the end for the last scene, and then for the Q&A, obviously, and I was just kind of fully expectant to get torn apart, in all sorts of different ways. But the audiences were just amazing and wonderful and really receptive. And even those that weren't necessarily into the film were still very, you know, their feedback was incredibly important and also very constructive. And the Q&As were incredibly constructive and really interesting. And I got asked lots of different things that I kind of didn't expect to get asked. And it was just a really kind of rich experience. It was one that definitely learned an awful lot from. And it was the same for all the festivals that I went to, and you know, Fargo and East End and Ireland. It played in a whole bunch of places, and all the audiences were really, really fantastic. There's nothing quite like getting grilled by a whole bunch of people after watching that. But it was great, and a lot of festivals were really into it and really took it on. I was very lucky to get some great reviews at the beginning, which definitely helped, I think, in terms of interest from distributors and the sales agent and everything. And eventually some guys at Random Media and The Orchard took it on and dared to release it. God bless them.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just laughing. I'm going to go. How did you raise your funding for your film?
Oh, with tremendous difficulty. Because I'd not made anything before, I couldn't prove to anybody that I could actually do it. I was just a guy with a camera saying, you fancy funding this? It didn't work out too well. And then I managed to raise a little bit because I had some fantastic friends who were really enthusiastic and eager to see me do something. And they put some money towards the project. And I went off and I started shooting the film with that. And that was just so important, because then I started cutting these sequences together, and then got introduced to actual investors who are interested in those kind of projects, and they then had proof that I could do it, and they could actually see kind of parts of the film and see it come into life. And that was kind of how it was raised. It was raised as we went along shooting, which was scary and not the easiest way to do it in terms of headspace, because you just want to film it, and especially having everybody kind of in character and all that kind of stuff, it's kind of nerve-wracking thinking, Christ, we might not finish this thing. But after we got past a certain point, we just knew it was going to happen, and the feeling behind the film was just so great, and yeah, it all came together in the end, which is the main thing. It's just, yeah, some very wonderful people who were really, interested in seeing this film come to life, which, very lucky. I think, you know, right time, right place, right circumstances, yeah.
Are you ready for fun questions?
Yeah.
Everybody's favorite part of the show, because they're so random. So you tell me you don't socialize. I'm going right there. So that might eliminate most of my questions. So I'm going to ask, what do you do for fun if you don't go outside?
Oh, I just sit down really quietly, you know. I like to get the light, and I just dim that thing right down. And I just, I just stare into space.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. So that's
your... That's not entirely true. I do go out. I do socialize a bit. I didn't socialize much before the film, but I do socialize a bit. But I do like sitting down in dark rooms. That's true.
Okay. Now I'll give you real fun questions.
Go on then.
What's your favorite film?
My favorite film might be Punch Drunk Love.
That's a great film. Absolutely, yeah. So underrated. I will give you that 100%.
Excellent. Yeah, love that film. Who thought Adam Sandler could do that?
Nobody.
It's Nobody. Fantastic, isn't it?
Do you go to the pound shop and buy DVDs?
Used to. Don't so much anymore.
I don't like them. If I was coming to visit you, where would you take me?
If you come to visit me, where would I take you? I would take you to a place in Northampton called The Lighthouse, because it's a strange hybrid craft beer place with fish and chip shop, but it's so clean it almost feels medical. I'd take you there.
Sounds great. What DVD on your shelf I'd be surprised you own?
Oh, that's a good question. The Gilmore Girls.
That would be, yep, I'll give you that one. Now we have to ask, do you like the Gilmore Girls, or is it just on the shelf?
Gilmore Girls is great, apart from the last series.
Now, you have all the seasons?
Damn straight. I don't have the Netflix special. I don't have that on DVDs yet. But I've got Netflix, so it's on there. But yeah, I've got all the Gilmore Girls. It's great. It's, you know, really well-written, good atmosphere in it. It's, you know, it's kind of quaint and sweet. And the characters, even though, like, on the face of it, it's a really kind of sickly, sweet, obvious, cliché thing, the characters are brilliantly flawed. And that is, like, the thing I genuinely like about it. They make all sorts of mistakes, which is great, because it's so easy to look at it and kind of be disparaging and think, oh, my God, this thing. But, like, yeah, no, it's good. And they make great film references, and Joel from the Brian Jonestown Massacre pops up in it. So, you know, it's great.
Are you mad at me if I did your Gilmore Girls fetish?
No, it's fine, you know. I take it you're not a fan of the Gilmore Girls.
I'm not, my friend, no. No, not anyway.
It's fine.
I did watch one episode, I'll be honest. I can even tell you the episode I watched that makes you feel better. She had termites in her house or something.
Who goes to a house?
Okay, she had to call her mom because she had termites in her house and she needed money.
Oh, yeah.
I had to, and that was an, I'm done. That was it for me. That was the one episode of Killer Girls.
Yeah, you know, these things happen. Yeah. And, you know, you've seen Malady again. It's that relationship with mothers and parent figures. You know, it's all there.
It didn't appeal to me. I'm sorry.
I can totally see why it wouldn't. You know, I can totally see why it wouldn't be many people's cup of tea.
People love it. That's okay with me. Sorry about that. People are trying to call me and it's hooked up to my thing. Tell everybody where they can find your film.
You can find the film in all sorts of digital places. It can be found on Amazon, Amazon Prime, iTunes, Vimeo, Fandango Now. It's on Xbox, it's on PlayStation, I think it's now on Canopy, Vubiquity, all sorts of places. And in the US, you can buy it on DVD through Amazon and through the distributor's website as well. So, yeah, Vudu, I think it's on there as well. It's all over the place.
That's awesome. I think that's great. You have distribution. Everybody can find your film. That's fabulous. Well, thank you for your time. I hope I didn't scare you about Gilmore Girls, but...
No, not at all.
And have a great night.
You too. It's fantastic to finally talk with you.
Yeah, great. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page? Thank you.